Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Lichten Lifestyle. I'm Steve Peck, along with Dr. Edward Lichten, the expert in the field of anti-aging and wellness medicine, and the author of the textbook of bioidentical hormones. On today's show, we'll be discussing fibroids. Now, these growths occur in about 25% of all women, and they're the leading cause of hysterectomy in the United States. Of every woman older than 35 years, one in five has a uterine fibroid. An estimated 600,000 hysterectomies are performed in the U.S. annually, and at least one-third are for fibroids. And we're going to have a guest in studio today. Pam will be here to share her experience. And for you listeners out there, if you'd like to write Dr. Lichten, he'd be happy to answer your questions. You can contact him by writing usdoctorradio@gmail.com. Or you can visit his website. Dr. Lichten's official website is usdoctor.com. And if you'd like to follow our shows, a lot of our listeners are doing that. You'll be notified when a new edition comes out. Follow us on Twitter. Our follow name is Anti-Aging Radio. If you'd like to arrange a consultation with Dr. Lichten, you can do that. His phone number is 248-593-9999. Again, 248-593-9999. And now the point when we welcome the star of the show, Dr. Edward Lichten. How are you, doctor?
Really good, Steve. And you?
I'm doing good. We're going to learn about fibroids. And to be honest, it's something I don't know a whole lot about. And you have a guest here, and we're going to find out what happened with her.
Right. Fibroids is something that every gynecologist learns about it very early in their career. Fibroid tumors are really just like whorls of muscle. Mm-hmm. If you look at a piece of wood and you see that knot in the wood, well, this is basically what happens. Mm-hmm. We don't know really what causes fibroids. Some people think it was related to estrogen. Some think it's related to testosterone. Now we find there's progesterone receptors, which just means that no one knows. We know that there's a racial predilection. Mm-hmm. Darker races have more fibroids. Mm-hmm. And maybe 40 to 50% more. Larger fibroids go along with the darker races. But I've had one Caucasian woman that the size of the fibroid was actually bigger than a 12-pound turkey. This is something that was affecting her breathing. It was so large.
That's amazing when you think about that. I mean, the to be carrying around something like that is, wow.
Right. Most of the problems the fibroids cause are bleeding. Mm-hmm. It's because it stretches the lining of the uterus and doesn't let the normal hormonal function work in that area of tissue. The bleeding can be excessive. Mm-hmm. Obviously rare, but some people can actually bleed to death with fibroid tumors. They interfere with pregnancy. Mm-hmm. They can be inside the uterus, sort of hanging like a grape or like a polyp. It can be in the wall, like where you put a safe, and then they could be on the outside or the inside of the abdomen. So we can find fibroids in many different locations. The lower down in the uterus they are, closer to the vaginal opening, the more trouble they cause. Surgically, they can be removed. We use laser now for some. We freeze some. But basically, any therapy short of hysterectomy doesn't keep them from growing back. Right. So if I take the time to take out 20 or 30 fibroids, these are very often not singular but multiple, 2 or 3 to 5 years later, they're back with the same issue. So taking out fibroids is a futile effort most mm-hmm. of the time. I've had one woman in the past, I took out a fibroid the size of a soccer ball and she got pregnant. So it's possible, but most times, especially later.
How do you remove that? I'm thinking of this huge size. Where is this coming out of?
Well, when you make the abdominal incision, mm-hmm. okay, and we're talking about maybe a 6 or 8 inch incision, the skin stretches some. We put the retractors in to hold things back. But the one we're talking about 20 years ago, this woman wanted to get pregnant, and she had one giant tumor inside the uterus, just like a balloon inside a balloon. And what I did was I actually split the uterus, scraped out this huge tumor, took it out just like pulling out a bowling ball, sewed the uterus back up and put some special instruments in to keep her from bleeding. And 9 months, 10 months, about a year and a half later, she came back pregnant, and I never thought it would work. But fibroid tumors cause bleeding, pain, infertility. They can interrupt delivery. I've had a fibroid that kept a woman had to have a C-section because mm-hmm. the fibroid brought the baby, kept the baby from coming down. And then, like I said, once in a while we'll see giant fibroids that are, you know, bigger than your head, almost the size, had one the size of a basketball.
Well, let me ask you this, because obviously that's a large size. Are the ladies becoming distended at some point with this?
Oh, definitely.
So, and they grow slow.
Right.
So, I mean, at one point when you're getting bigger down there and you know you're not pregnant, don't you say, I better go to the doctor?
Well, I think when we talk to Pam, Pam's not one to do it, but she'll talk about other women who just deny what's happening. Mm. You know, bleeding to the point where you're anemic or passing out, having fibroids so big you have to change your dress size or actually wear a tutu because you actually are so large.
Tutu.
And just sit there and ignore it. I mean, denial is something we all do. This is one thing because there's an identification situation, too, that women who have fibroids often think they have to have a hysterectomy, and they're different people, different educations who feel that they don't have a uterus, they're not female anymore. There's a whole sexual, emotional, religious aspect of being able to reproduce, and fibroids play a big part in this. For a number of different people and in different situations.
So what you're saying is if you have one, you can successfully have it removed without a hysterectomy and then be able to...
It depends where the fibroid is. If it's in the wall, like a safe, mm-hmm. you would have to cut right through the wall to get it out. That doesn't work. If it's sitting like on a polyp or like on a grape, mm-hmm. On a little stalk, those are simple to remove, but those probably didn't cause a problem in the first place. Mm-hmm. So the doctor can tell with ultrasound where the fibroid is, but hopefully we're going to talk about a way that we don't even have to talk about surgery anymore for hundreds of thousands of women.
And I understand that women as young as 20 can get these, but primarily it's 35 and above, correct?
That's right. I've operated on women as young as 20 with good-sized fibroids. I remember one woman who got pregnant, and the fibroid got smaller, got pregnant the second time, and the fibroid got huge. It was bigger than the baby. So they're hormonally influenced, and you have to go to the gynecologist who's going to be conservative and yet direct in having different treatments. And we're going to talk about the different treatments today and some of the new ones that we've come up with that probably are a better way of going than what we're classically taught or still are classically taught in medical school and residency.
Well, what is the old school for removing these? And then we'll get into what's new.
Pam will be able to tell us because I'm sure she's been offered all these modalities. But generally, first thing they do is let's try to stop the bleeding because usually bleeding is the approach it starts with. And using a low-dose birth control pill would mean less hormones. So theoretically, that might be a way of controlling it. If that doesn't work, some will use a shot called Depo-Provera, mm-hmm. same thing they use for birth control, which has no estrogen. But that doesn't work very well, and these women may bleed continuously for up to a year and a half. The third treatment is a drug called Lupron. Lupron is an expensive drug. I think it's now almost $700. Mm-hmm. It's a shot that shuts off, creates an artificial menopause. So it's really great hot flashes, night sweats, vaginal dryness, no sex drive. But the idea is if you starve the fibroid of the hormones, then in fact it will shrink. And if you shrink it for a while, it may stay small for 2 years.
Kind of like chemotherapy.
Yeah, but not nicely, these are not cancer, by the way. The chance of a fibroid being cancerous is one in a million. So if you have a fibroid and they say worry about cancer, they're really pulling your leg. Fibroids are benign and they're common. After Lupron, we'll talk about an old-fashioned drug called Danazol that Pam and I will talk about. This is a drug that we used to use before Lupron. Has a lot of positive effects that Lupron doesn't, but it's not pushed by the drug companies, and it's one-fourth the cost. Mm-hmm. And then we'll talk about our secret new weapon against fibroids and bleeding and osteoporosis and no libido and migraine and everything else that we're doing now.
I also understand it can be an inherited tendency running in the family.
That's true. And again, there's a genetic factor which may be in some part racial, and that the black races have higher levels of androgens. So a black female has stronger bones than a white female, and she has more muscles. You can see, you know, who's, you know, except for Serena blows her cool at the tennis court. There's more muscle mass because there's more androgens in the black female. Somehow this correlates to an increased risk of fibroids. And the white women who have less bone mass, less muscle, have a lower incidence of fibroids. Mm. And that correlation has been known for hundreds of years, but no one has been able to find the exact hormonal trigger to say, this is why. And that's what I mean by receptors. What do these hormones relate to? Do they relate to estrogen? Do they relate to progesterone or testosterone? Different articles say different things. So we really can say, we don't know why a fibroid grows, but if your mom had fibroids, you got probably twice the highest incidence as your neighbors, you'll have fibroids too.
Well, if your mom had them and it ran in the family, anything you can do to prevent getting them?
Again, it's something you treat when it becomes a problem. Because if you have a fibroid that's sitting like a grape on a stalk, you don't even know it's there. So why bother? So, only if it's bleeding or infertility or size does it become an issue. You don't artificially go in there to take off this little fibroid that's sitting like a grape. It's a waste of time and money. You don't need to do that.
But if it's there and they grow slowly, isn't it inevitable that it will grow?
No.
No.
They actually calcify. So depending on how much blood supply is going to this tumor, it may become rock hard like a marble, and then it doesn't grow anymore. So we can take these out, and they're usually hard, but they may not be calcified yet. When they're calcified, it's just like rolling marbles across the floor. Those won't grow bigger. It's the soft ones that continue to grow.
Is that what happens to kidney stones, too? They get hard? Calcification?
Well, kidney stones are calcified, so that's why they're rock hard and they don't pass.
But this, the fibroid does the same thing, you said.
Yes, if there's no blood supply, it starts to calcify. If it calcifies, it just sits there and you're done with it. But the hormones continue, so you may form another fibroid in another area.
Okay.
So when you're, if you're prone for fibroids, they can be multiple. And you can take out 60 fibroids if you're going to pick through a whole uterus on rare occasion. I don't recommend that, but it's been done.
Well, let's bring in our guest, a patient of yours, Dr. Licton. Hi, Pam. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
We're learning about fibroids today. I know I am. I didn't know much about them before, but Dr. Licton tells me you have had fibroids and have dealt with this situation. So maybe you could describe to me and all of our listeners a little bit about your experience, how you discovered them and how you found yourself at Dr. Licton's doorstep after going to a lot of other doctors and trying to get this problem resolved.
Well, that's true. I have been to several doctors and tried different methods of dealing with my fibroids. I was going to the same gynecologist for many, many years, and he diagnosed fibroids, if I tell my age, I'm 50, and I was diagnosed with the fibroids probably close to 30. But every year he would say that they're okay, that they're fine, they're not growing. And then as I approached 40, 41, 42, they began to grow. And he said, well, now it's time to introduce you to a surgeon. You should have these removed. And I had numerous fibroids, one big one about the size of a grapefruit, and then numerous. So when he introduced me to the surgeon, I guess the surgeon had a bad day that day. And he says, well, you know, I'm going to do the surgery, but you'll have to sign a piece of paper that says before I go in, if I found numerous or, you know, a problem, that I'll be able to remove your uterus right there while you're open on the table.
Wow.
And I just didn't feel comfortable with that. It's like, I know it might not need my uterus, but I was born with it and I wanted to keep it. And I didn't want to wake up and find that I had a hysterectomy without my knowledge. So obviously, I left that doctor. I went to another doctor who flattered me. He said, oh, you're still young. You may still be able to have children. You don't want a hysterectomy. We're going to try the Lupron. So I did try the Lupron, and it's just as Dr. Licton had described. It was very expensive. It was a quarterly shot. And then there was also, I had a concern about osteoporosis with Lupron because it's a very strong drug. And I said, if I'm 40 and I have to be on this drug for 10 years, that I just wasn't comfortable with that, that it might have some further side effects because I would have to be on it so long before menopause and my fibroids would begin to shrink. So I'm not with this. So I I withdrew from the Lupron, and I did go through menopause. It was, I probably had to go through menopause twice, but it was kind of hard. And, but at the same time, then, you know, you're tired all the time, your periods last, seems like 2 weeks, all the symptoms because of the bleeding, being tired, no energy, that type of thing. And then through a recommendation, I heard of Dr. Licton. So I made an appointment and came, and we had a discussion. I started his treatment, and things have been rosy ever since.
How long have you been seeing Dr. Licton now?
About 3 or 4 years now. So, and I'm very happy with my protocol. My fibroids have not grown. My energy level is high, and it's working out well.
So, Dr. Licton.
So I'll let him describe the protocol because he's the doctor.
Yes. What did you do differently than what had been done before?
Well, let's go back and talk about Lupron. Lupron's the new last 15 years hot drug. Mm-hmm. And this is a small amino acid that basically creates a menopause and shuts off all the hormones. So you get the hot flashes, the vaginal dryness, and it's only recommended for use for 6 months, maximum 9 months, because the incidence of bone loss over a period of less than a year can be 5%. That's how much bone loss can occur when you shut off all the hormones.
But if you're only doing that for 5 months, what do you expect to achieve in 5 months' time?
Well, the goal is that these fibroids, you've dropped the blood supply to these fibroids, and maybe some of them have calcified,
okay.
Maybe they've shrunk, and maybe for 2 years you get a 2-year window before the system wakes up and comes back. And they hope that going through menopause, the fibroids will shrink, but there's no guarantee. Fibroids can get larger after the menopause. So basically you're saying, try this expensive drug, have terrible symptoms, the drug company needs your money, and it's a temporary solution. If at best. And then if you start bleeding again, you can't use the Lupron, and then you get your hysterectomy.
So you definitely don't like that treatment. What about the experience Pam had when she talked to the surgeon and he said, be prepared to sign these documents?
Well, I can't argue because I was there once, okay? And more than once we've gone in there and found the fibroids were in such a position that to take it out of the wall, you actually would have to do a hysterectomy. So that's a possibility. Now we have better sophisticated tests so we can identify where the fibroids are before surgery. Mm-hmm. But whenever you go in there, if you're going to do something, you do it. And when I would do something when someone like Pam, if she needed surgery and that was the only option, we do a laparoscopy first, take a little incision and take a look. And then we can always wake the patient up and say, okay, here's exactly what it is. This is why we have to do it. As a matter of fact, in the state of Michigan, if you do a hysterectomy, even under emergency circumstance, you're dead in the water malpractice-wise. So the whole point is, they make too many rules, but the rule is, patient has to be informed. You want the patient to be informed. And even if you do an outpatient surgery, to be able to describe exactly where the fibroids are. We have a new technique where we actually put a little balloon in the uterus and blow it up with water. And then you can see where the fibroids are and how they impinge on the inside lining. The bottom line is, we even have one more procedure we didn't have when Pam was first told she needed a hysterectomy. There's something called embolization. The radiologist can actually put a, just like you do a heart cath, mm-hmm. You put a tube into the artery in your groin and courses up to the uterus and put cotton into the blood vessels and actually have the uterus dry up. They cut the blood supply to the uterus. So there's a lot of different techniques now to avoid hysterectomy, and probably a third of the hysterectomies theoretically could be avoided by using this ablative technique. But what we did with Pam, because she'd been on Lupron and knew how nasty the side effects were, we went back to the old-fashioned testosterone derivative called danazol. And you've heard me talk about it before because I've researched this drug for, you know, probably more than 30 years. We've used it for bleeding. We use it for menstrual pain. We use it for migraine. And actually, a big, large study by the Cochrane database says the only drug that works for women who bleed is danazol. But it's an old drug from the 50s, so everyone thinks new drugs are better. Mm-hmm. Using low-dose danazol, that's one or two pills a day, not eight, we're able to offer less complete dropping the hormone levels. So the danazol doesn't give you the hot flashes unless you take eight pills a day. So I thought we could use danazol because it would maintain the bone mass, stop the bleeding, not give the hot flashes, And because it's a testosterone derivative, would offer some improved libido and muscle tone and mental attitude, because Pam was depressed with what was going on. It's not fun to know you're going to be bleeding or
you look depressed
on.
Just remembering that, Pam. Oh, I was depressed, wasn't I?
Yeah, I was tired and depressed.
Yeah, tired, anemic, depressed, and just not fun anymore. So we talked about the danazol, and this is a process of adaptation. We tried 2 pills or 3 pills, 4 pills, whatever it was that we needed to control the bleeding. And when the bleeding was controlled, we had that part of the problem controlled without the hot flashes. And we adjust the medication on a monthly basis until Pam said, this dose is good for me. Now, we did this. And the fun part is the insurance company didn't want to accept danazol, which was $225 a month, versus Lupron, which was $675. So part of Pam's thing is, now I'm writing letters to insurance companies say, you know, holy shit, how stupid are you? Nicely. You can't put that in there? Okay. But the bottom line is, the insurance company still refused to see that this drug was FDA approved in the 50s and was approved for the same reason. They still wouldn't cover it. They were only going to pay the company that makes Lupron.
Well, did that get worked out, Pam? Did your insurance company eventually understand that?
I changed insurance companies, and the new company did accept it. The first one that I was on would not accept it. They just rejected it, saying that it's experimental and
experimental from 1940. Mm-hmm. But this was, but you understand, this is the health czar here for right. The insurance company says we're going to pay Tap Abbott because they give me a cruise on the River Nile every year while the other company doesn't, for some reason. But the bottom line is, here we had a cheaper, simpler, safer mm-hmm. drug with 3 times more exposure out there that the drug company wouldn't take, but Pam, you know, paid for it because it worked. Mm-hmm. And then as we worked our way through this, we talked about other options, and danazol is approved for years. I mean, when we talk to Denise next time, she's been on it for 26 years. Mm-hmm. But we talked about doing something more than just using danazol, because we had a better way of shutting down these uterine fibroids. And what we did was we talked about these new testosterone derivatives that we talk about on occasion here. And these drugs have an interesting effect in that they block the receptor. See, every cell has like a little antenna waiting for a signal. You got to hook into that receptor, or just think of it like the space station. You got to dock. Yeah. So the hormones have to dock, and there's a little transport hormone called sex hormone binding, and that's got to dock into the cell so the cell knows it's supposed to bleed or cycle. And what we had discovered over the last 3 years is that we could use one of these testosterone derivatives to actually block the docking hormone. So there wouldn't be any estrogen receptor triggering the fibroid to grow or the uterus to bleed or the patient to have symptoms. And this blocking that we're able to do blocks both estrogen and testosterone receptors in the uterus. It doesn't affect the brain. So here we're able to create a menopausal uterus without having menopausal hot flashes. We're able to create a menopausal uterus but increase the bone strength. So we're selectively able to turn off the bad things. Mm-hmm. You know, no migraine, menstrual pain, bleeding, fibroids. And actually, the size of the fibroids has shrunk somewhat. I don't have the exact measurements, but Pam can tell that they're not getting bigger. They're getting smaller. And she's done this over the last 10 years, and there's no hysterectomy.
Do you get testing, Pam, that lets you know how big your fibroids were or are?
You can just tell through the gynecologist exam, through a regular.
So you're pushing,
if you just push on the belly and say, okay, you know. But Pam can say, your clothes aren't getting bigger. Right. Your clothes get a little smaller.
You can tell by your stomach size and your bloat.
I'm thinking it's a good excuse, Pam. I'm thinking, I'm not getting fatter, it's fibroids.
Right.
You know?
Well, no, you want to fit your clothes.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Doesn't matter what it is.
Right.
Yeah, and certain other activities it can get in the way too. So, you know, as long as no one else is complaining, you know, everything is working just fine. But the point was, we used a combination of the danazol and lower dose, mm-hmm. along with the testosterone injections, which I think you're doing, what, every 2 to 4 weeks now? Mm-hmm. So not even every week. She's getting the shots once every 2 to 4 weeks. And it's been coasty. I mean, you're old enough that you should be going through menopause, but you're not going to go through menopause if you're on this program ever.
That's good news, right?
I've already been through menopause once. I don't want to go again. So it's very good news. Very, very good news.
So the thing we're saying is if we use this drug more often, these FDA-approved drugs from the 1950s, mm-hmm. we may be able to eliminate at least half of those fibroid hysterectomies. So I'm assuming about 100,000 to 150,000 hysterectomies done for bleeding and fibroids might be preventable.
I don't know. We talk about that a lot. You know, if you go back and use some of the drugs from the 50s, things would work. But how do you get the medical community to spin back the hands of time?
Well, remember where they're being educated. And you heard this from Kara last week. What happens is you go to medical school and there's only 100, let's say 150, 170 medical schools. So if I wanted to control all of medicine, all I have to do is buy 170 professors. And everybody from this point on will be learning the same thing. Mm-hmm. And hospitals run, universities run on money, mm-hmm. and you get your grants from the drug companies, because the drug companies support 55% of all research. So if they come in and say, I want you to do a study on fibroids, and we're going to give you $500,000, and we want you to take pictures of do ultrasounds on the fibroids before and after the Lupron shots for 6 months, mm-hmm. well, they're very glad to do that. And they say, look, Lupron works. Company makes Lupron doesn't say, let's have you compare Lupron to Danicrin.
Yeah.
Doesn't say, let's have you compare it to the $6 shot that Dr. Licton has in his office, you see. Mm-hmm. There's no financial incentive in doing the cheap, safer route. And then if someone brings up these other choices, well, you know, Danazol is an old drug. We don't use that anymore. Or why would you want to be on testosterone? You'll grow a hair and a beard. And you don't look like you have a beard. I will. But the point is, there's all kinds of stories they'll tell that are not true, uh-huh. but they're easy to keep a dogmatic point of view. We know Lupron works because that's the only thing we've ever seen.
Right.
Therefore, there is no other choice. And there's two ways we talked about controlling healthcare. You control healthcare by either having the health czar telling you that this is how you do it, or you lose your job, or you make the drug not available. So there's only two means to have uniform healthcare. As a doctor, you write for Lupron, or if you write for something else, you lose your license, or the only drug that's available is Lupron.
Yeah.
And both modalities are used in every country across the world to control the delivery of healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Well, back to you, Pam. Was this painful?
This treatment painful?
Well, no, but I mean, were your fibroids, were you noticing pain, or was it just that you were...
They were uncomfortable.
They were.
They were uncomfortable. My clothes, they were growing. It extended the length of your premenstrual symptoms. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You were tired when you were tired all the time.
How does that make you more tired?
Premenstrual symptoms?
Well, through the fibroids that are growing. What
I think it just exaggerated the periods.
Right. So you become anemic.
So the anemia makes
right.
you more tired.
Matter of fact, mm-hmm. I have one of the patients of mine actually is in downtown Detroit. She walked in here with a hemoglobin of 4.6. Normal hemoglobin is 13. And I said, you can't be serious that you're walking around wearing a pad, like a diaper. Mm-hmm. She says, I just can't take time off from work. I said, you can die. Your blood count's 4. Normal 14. What do you want me to do? And then for her, you know, because it's medical legal, I gave her Lupron. She wouldn't take the Lupron. So I hope she's still okay out there. She got an opinion saying, you need a hysterectomy. Your fibroids the size of a soccer ball. Your blood count's 4. We got to save your life. But there's some people that the idea of hysterectomy is tantamount to dying. And this woman was in her 50s or early, late 40s and just made no sense. Mm-hmm. So anemia, low blood count. Very typical with fibroids. And the PMS is, I'm bloated, I'm constipated, I'm exhausted, I lay in bed, I don't feel well. You know, I've never had fibroids, but I think over the last 150,000 visits, I've heard a few stories. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I don't feel good. And in certain positions, very uncomfortable. And sometimes it's hard to empty your bladder. And sometimes you feel like you have to go every 30 seconds. So it gets to, it's a quality of life issue that can be, you know, medically necessary to intervene.
And that's because the fibroid is pressing on different organs?
I blame the fibroids for everything, for gas, for back pain.
Really? Well,
just
since,
because it's pushing on different parts of your body.
But do you find that to be the case now that you've reduced the size of them? That it was the cause of a lot of those things?
I think so.
Yeah.
I still have those symptoms, but at least I don't blame the fibroids.
That's the danger.
Yeah, but I do feel better and more energetic.
Well, that's good. But that could be the testosterone as well, right?
Well, how much are we going to embarrass Pam? We just going to keep this quiet?
Well, ask Pam, you know.
Pam's laughing, and don't worry, I won't embarrass you too much. I won't embarrass you in private. But basically, the fibroids can become a real issue with mm-hmm. intercourse.
Okay.
Depending where the fibroid is, mm-hmm. it can get in the way, and it can be a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times it falls right behind the uterus, and that's where penetration occurs. So it feels like, you know, you run up against a wall, and you can't move, and there's a lot of pain. Other times in different positions, it can get in the way and cause different irritations. And intercourse can trigger contractions too, and a lot of women will know the premenstrual period or near their period, they just won't even think about having intercourse because it's all going to be more than uncomfortable.
Was that the case with you? Things were painful at that point?
Before Dr. Lichten?
Yeah.
There were times where it was painful, but mm-hmm. That wasn't my major issue.
Yeah.
Because I'm single, so I really can't speak to that.
Okay. I got you.
But shots are nice now, mm-hmm. right, Pam?
The shots are great. The shots do give you energy.
Yeah.
And there's not that period where you're trying to avoid sex. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't happen.
Well, good.
Well, it's all good.
Good little side effect, mm-hmm. I guess.
Do we tell mom and dad about the 36-year-old boyfriend, or we just let that slip for the time being?
I'm blushing.
Just energy, yep. in our. I know you were 50. I thought you were a lot younger. I'm sorry, but then I've been.
Well, she looks younger.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, thank you.
You know, been a doctor so long, they come in and say, "You delivered me." Okay, fine, thanks. All right, but the bottom line is, yeah, you know, part of the testosterone replacement is you don't have the 50-year-old attitude mm-hmm. For both male and females. You don't think mm-hmm. old. If 50's midlife, then you still think 35. And a lot of my patients, everybody in this room included, doesn't think their age, doesn't act their age. So, you know, Pam, I don't expect you to date any old fart your age, or my age, or Steve's age. But the bottom line is, it's how you think. And yeah. The androgens are so important because our environment is so estrogen toxic mm-hmm. from the food, the beef cattle that have pellets, the DDT in 7 sprays that they pull on our vegetables, the plastics we eat from, that this is a real cause. And what we've discovered after all these years is that by using these testosterones, we're able to block these chemical estrogens. See, the body just doesn't respond to the natural estrogens and testosterone produced, but it responds to the hormonal estrogens that are out there. So the same thing that's, you know, killing the polar bears and giving the alligators the split organs, all these poisons, and why, if you notice, you know, we don't see lightning bugs much like we did 25, 30 years ago. The toxins are affecting reproduction of all the species, and one example we're having here is that the bleeding disorders we're seeing more, not less of, and it's in some related to the hormonal toxicity, just like we talked about diabetes and male performance issues. Now we have bleeding issues for women. We have breast cancer for women. All these are hormonal, and we're actually poisoning ourselves. But fortunately, this injection mix can be shown chemically to block it. And it blocks in a unique way that actually fits a need of, you know, we've done, what, 30? This is our 29th or 30th story. Every story is different, yet most of the stories have the same basic character, and that is there's something wrong with what is going on with our lives, and these medicines seem to have a perfect fit for it. And this is an example. The endometriosis, the menstrual pain, the fibroids, and the migraine. Women's complaints around their menstrual period, We can block it 95% of the time now without surgery or expensive medication. Mm-hmm. And isn't it nice to not have periods and have an attitude of 10 or 15 years younger?
I agree.
You have to say yes.
Yeah, I agree. I'm nodding my head. Yes.
You're nodding yes, but we can't yeah. see it over the radio.
I agree.
And absolutely. Pam, when the first time you came and spoke with Dr. Licton and he told you these different methods, were you skeptical?
Yes. When you hear about taking testosterone mm-hmm. As a woman, will that work? But he told me that it will just suppress the periods and stop the bleeding.
Right.
And that would hopefully shrink the fibroid. Mm-hmm. And then after being on the treatment for a while and it was working and my energy level was up and, you know, it had other benefits mm-hmm. that I found it to be quite beneficial.
I wonder what some of your patients like Pam and myself are going to do one day if you should not practice medicine anymore. I mean, if you have some of this, you know, you have methods that work so well for so many people, but not every doctor makes those available.
What, you know? No doctors make it available. That's you.
It's a little frightening to me.
Well, I feel blessed that, you know, I've been given the insight to see this and to ask the question why mm-hmm. and been able to discover these medications that we use. I mean, you know, hopefully I keep pushing Kara to be the endocrinologist, and Kara understands the philosophy, and Kara understands there's only one thing that matters, and that's what works.
Kara's his daughter.
Yeah. I met her. She's beautiful. Did you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So Kara understands. It doesn't, to me, it's almost like the computer. It doesn't make a difference who's punching the keys. You just got to punch the right keys. So if you find the right medicine that works, it should become more universal. And that's what we talked about with our electronic medical records and the information on the website is it's out there so you can say, hey, you know, why can't you try this? And then you hear the excuses. We don't use that drug anymore. Well, why not? We don't use testosterone. Why not? Because I say so. Whenever I hear that dogmatic, because we say so, then you know they're wrong. And trust me, I was already the favorite by the second day when I told the teacher, but you're just telling me this because it's your dogma. Tell me why. Kick me out of the class. But the point is, what works is what counts. And these simple, cheap testosterone drugs from the 50s can do so many things at no cost. If you want to save health care, you don't restrict it. You get rid of the disease. So how much cheaper is it for Pam to be on a medication where she doesn't have to take medicine for menopause, mm-hmm. didn't need a hysterectomy or the complications, doesn't have to take an antidepressant, and doesn't have to take some medicine to keep her bones strong? I mean, how much money have we saved because we prevented the disease or we intervened early?
Yeah.
This is where medicine's about. The rest of this stuff, this is all political. So who's going to take the money? Well, I'm more interested, definitely more interested in having my patients just say, this works. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, money's one thing, but the quality of life, now we're talking.
Well, I think Pam will say the quality of life today is better than it was 10 years ago.
I would say.
Yeah.
I would most definitely say. Again, I can't say it often enough. The energy level is higher. You don't go through the peaks and valleys of the PMS and coming out of it. You're consistent. You've watched your diet, exercise with this. People tell me I do look younger than what I actually am. So many people are surprised to hear my age.
And the attitude and the energy goes along. These testosterones actually give off a little pheromone. So, you know, she just can't parade Pam out too far. You know, the guys are just traping after left and right going, hi.
All right. So the protocol again. What is Dr. Licton's protocol? When a patient like Pam comes to you, the first thing to do is what?
First, we're deciding whether pregnancy is an issue. So if a woman who's younger and has a fibroid and has infertility, we evaluate whether that fibroid is in fact causing the infertility. If the fibroid were present inside the uterus, mm-hmm. we have an outpatient surgical procedure like going into a cave, and we actually can trim up that fibroid. Just cut it out, outpatient goes home, even fibroids as big as golf balls. And once you remove that fibroid, then the uterus can close over, seal over from the inside, and you've done very little interruption to the uterus, and that would improve their fertility. But you have to be infertile. Ultrasound shows there's a fibroid, and if it's large enough, then we would do this. So that's the fertility side. Mm-hmm. Now, if the fibroids are bigger and they're affecting fertility, we try to shrink them. And I'm not arguing with Lupron. After 6 months or 8 months of Lupron, you've done everything you can. You can say you now melt all the medical constraints that our medical profession says. But at that point in time, the fertility drugs may or may not trigger the fibroids to grow back. So fertility, we manage. If we can remove them, great. Laparoscopic removal of fibroids is probably a waste of time. Surgical removal of small fibroids is probably a waste of time. Fertility occurs without the surgery most of the time. Now, if we have someone who's older and says, I'm not interested in having children, the decision becomes, are the fibroids so troublesome for her life that that's pointing to a hysterectomy, like the 200,000 we talk about every year? Yeah. And this would be in Pam's case. And the women who have fibroids, if they are located in large metropolitan areas, mm-hmm. may be at university facilities where they're pushing surgery to. Okay? So there's a part of understanding what's out there mm-hmm. and getting alternatives. And the alternatives, obviously, if you're a free-floating doctor like I am, I don't have to follow what everybody else has to do. So I can look at different medications. I was trained on danazol, was out before Lupron. I've done work with migraines and PMS. I've used this on thousands of women. I know about the side effects, the complications. I know that a little water pill called spironolactone blocks any type of little facial hairs that might occur. I know a little thyroid keeps the weight off. I know how to mix these three drugs together. So I like danazol because it gives me control. It's not just one big heavy hit that's stuck with you for 3 months. I can adjust it day by day. And we look at how we can get the woman to have no bleeding but no hot flashes. So the word titration is involved. Now, what we did with Pam was once she was comfortable on the danazol, we talked about improving the androgen effect with these special blockers so I could lower her danazol and give her better control of the bleeding while we would make her bones stronger, take care of the depression, improve her mental attitude, give her that sexy glow and all that energy. Mm-hmm. So we've titrated an old drug, danazol. We've added another old drug, testosterone, without any facial side effects, no acne, no weight gain. In fact, most women lose weight and they tighten their cellulite on this drug. And we found something that's simple and cheap that can be useful. And with this medicine, I've replaced some of the most difficult surgeries I would have had to do, would have to have done, by using these drugs. And no surgery beats surgery.
Right. What is the danazol?
Danazol is a testosterone derivative that's been around for 50 years, 60 years. It's a pill. And it's very weak. It's not as strong as the testosterone shots.
So why do you combine them together then?
Because I could get the effect of the danazol to keep it level. And she's taking the danazol every day, like one pill, like 100 milligrams for most people would be like an 800. Mm-hmm. And then she's adding the testosterone shot every 2 weeks or every month. Mm-hmm. Or if her boyfriend's around, maybe more often, depending on what her needs are. Because a testosterone shot's not going to last for more than a week. So if she were in a situation where, you know, unlimited libido was acceptable, she could be off the danazol and having a shot once a week. So we can move these two drugs back and forth because they're testosterone. One's weaker, one's stronger, to adjust what she needs. And that's what we tell. Every patient's different. We want her to be happy, and we want her to be healthy, and we want her to be nicely balanced.
Is that your expertise that comes into play? This is just knowing how to put this all together?
This is the art of medicine.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, medicine says you got a fibroid, treat with Lupron, and then if something doesn't work, you go throw up your hands and there's a hysterectomy. There's your path. And I go in and say, okay, Lupron works because it lowers estrogen level. I know there's another drug that lowers estrogen level, so why can't I use it just away? The principle is still the same, lower the estrogen. Mm-hmm. And that's where the danazol comes in. And then I said, okay, I can manipulate this a little bit more to give her more energy, better blood count, better sex drive by adding this. And what we do is, if it's too much, Pam says, I'm not coming back and see you for a month because this is just too much, and Pam, you can smile. You know what I mean? Or the drugs are too low. I missed two shots. I know I have to come in because I feel like I'm going to spot a little bit. So she knows what she needs, and that's the most sensitive indication because I'm a doctor treating a patient, not treating a blood test, not treating an ultrasound. When Pam knows what she wants, and I teach my patients what the options are, and then they all experiment. Some use more drugs, have symptoms. Some have less drugs, have symptoms. And then you learn. That's how you learn what the limits are and what fits you best. Mm-hmm. And that's what Pam did. And Pam's comfortable. So if I don't see her for a month, then...
You know, he sees me every month.
Yeah, once a month. You skipped a month and you came back and said, I skipped a month and I'm sorry I skipped
again.
A month. And then there's sometimes, well, boyfriend's in town, see me, I see every 2 weeks or every week. So it's all relative.
Yeah.
So patients are in control of their health. I teach them what I can do and why it works. Then they come back and tell me what they want to fit their lifestyle. It's a patient-physician relationship that's based on trust and understanding. She knows I want the best for her. She knows what the drugs will do. She knows if she does too much. She knows if she does too little. So she is in charge of what she needs. And that's where medicine really belongs, is to educate the patient and let the patient tell you what they want.
So, Pam, is that the type of relationship you guys have had? You kind of, you know, monitor this on your own and you come back and give him your feedback?
Most definitely. Dr. Licton is great to work with.
Yeah.
Most definitely. And you can feel the difference. You know when, you know, you need another shot or if it's weaning off. And if you go too long, you will begin to spot and your those symptoms will begin to reappear. So you try not, I try and come at least once a month.
Does Pam do anything with the estrogen patches, or is that not necessary?
No, what's interesting is because the danazol is a testosterone, and testosterone in both male and female are converted somewhat to estrogen. So as we talked before, you need testosterone for a male to have a libido.
Right.
The same thing as a woman needs the estrogen for hot flashes and good sleep pattern. And it depends. There are some women who are on testosterone shots and need an estrogen patch. Pam doesn't. Her estrogen level is actually about the same level of a 35-year-old because the testosterone shots and the danazol and her normal body structure, black women have a much higher level of adrenal DHEA, so they actually will maintain more estrogen. So as long as her symptoms are there and there's no vaginal dryness and no hot flashes, you know, what else do we need? And like I said, we treat the disease as the patient presents, and hot flashes are an issue and vaginal estrogen is not an issue, so Pam's a happy camper.
You're
yes,
a happy camper, Pam.
Yes, I am.
Hello, campers. Well, that's good.
I am. It is working. It is working well.
Yeah. Anything else we need to know about this topic of fibroids?
Well, if we use more of this androgen preparation we've come up with, my colleagues will kill me. There won't be any need for gynecology. Think about it. If you don't have heavy menstrual periods, you don't have PMS, you don't have fibroids, okay? You don't need many hysterectomies anymore, okay? Now you treat the menopause, so you don't have to see them for that and the depression. You don't have any osteoporosis. We basically almost eliminate a specialty. So gynecologists will be left as obstetricians because women will still get pregnant. Oh, I forgot to tell you that part. The medicine works as a contraception too. So, you know, as long as we're reproducing, there'll be obstetricians. But gynecology is a specialty. Probably 60% of it could be handled very comfortably by a family practitioner with 1 day of training under our protocol.
Oh, you're not making friends right now.
I'm making happy patients.
He is
isn't that what? Isn't that what it's all about?
What's that, Pam?
He is making friends. It's just on this side of the fence.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But think of all those drugs we don't need anymore.
Yeah.
You know, there were 61 million prescriptions for Premarin written in the year 2001. Mm-hmm. Tap Abbott makes $3 billion off of Lupron. Prozac sales and related drugs are in the $15 billion range. Fosamax, just for osteoporosis, is a $5 billion drug. Mm-hmm. And then all the surgical procedures have got to cost a little pretty penny. You know, versus medication that costs us, you know, $10 a week. And, you know, Pam doesn't give herself a shot. She just comes in and says, things are great. Give me a shot. Take my blood pressure. Bye. We don't even bother to monitor blood counts anymore because she hasn't been anemic in years. Once a year or two, we'll get a blood count, and she'll get a pap smear somewhere or somehow. And we will be helping people to prevent disease. Early intervention and prevention, that's the real key medicine should be focusing on. Yeah. And Pam's a perfect example.
Yeah, it's been fun to do these shows with Dr. Lichten, Pam, because you find out that a lot of what he does has such a healing effect on a variety of disorders and diseases. And it's all pretty much the same story. You know, there are other more toxic chemicals that are being prescribed, and that's by the mainstream. Mm-hmm. But yet some of these drugs like you're on back from the 50s are working amazingly well.
And I'm very comfortable with it.
Yeah.
You read so many stories about these drugs and how toxic they may be. And I just don't feel that. I feel like if I eat well and exercise and keep up this protocol, that, you know, it does work well. It is a quality of life issue, and I'm happy with it.
Did you research this at all before you saw Dr. Lichten, or did you just take the lead and come in? And
no, I didn't. I didn't research it. I trusted Dr. Lichten. I trusted the story that he told. And plus, I didn't feel like I had any other options. I've already been through the Lupron. I didn't want the surgery.
Yeah.
So this seemed like a softer way to go. The medication seemed much softer than the Lupron. So I trusted him and I tried it. And again, that was 3 years ago. And it's a protocol that I, you know, hope to keep.
Mm-hmm. And what's gone on with her fibroids now? They've calcified, like you said, or they've shrunk, or what's going on in there?
I haven't done an exam, and I don't know when the last time we did an ultrasound is. But
do you need to?
Well, the patient would tell me if there was a problem. Okay, and
does he need to?
No, my.
If it's not bothering her, we're not bothering it. How's that?
That's exactly right. They haven't been bothering me.
No.
Of course, everybody wants a flatter stomach, but you know, I'm working on that. But they have not grown. And I, as I said before, I don't have any of those issues about being tired or PMS. So it's...
It seems that if I were the woman, I would want them out. I mean, even if they don't really do anything, it just seems like if I knew I had stuff in there,
I'd
want it out.
And that's exactly what my mother says. You should just get them removed. Why do you want them? Because I don't want surgery if I don't have to have it.
Well, it depends what kind of surgery.
I don't want surgery if I don't have to have it. And I definitely don't want a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
I know, you know, I'm past my childbearing years and people say, well, you don't need it. But I'm of the philosophy I was born with it and I want to die with it. I want to keep it as long as I, if I have the choice or a way to keep it, I want to keep my body intact.
Any value to that?
Well, I said there's different people with different philosophies and, you know, Pam and I are the same socioeconomic level, so we're not saying that. But and I've been doing this for a long time, but within inner city situations, there is a certain mentality among some people that no uterus, you're not a woman. And this dates back 40 years. It doesn't necessarily apply to Pam, but there's a training, your mother, grandmother, whatever. If you can't get pregnant, you can't have kids, you don't have your uterus, there's something wrong with you. And it's subconscious, and it still affects millions of women. And same thing with a guy. I mean, I've had women who come in and said, I can't tell him he wants to marry me, he wants to know I can't have kids. I had endometriosis, and I had hysterectomy, and if I tell him that, he's going to leave. Well, that's not a good way to start a relationship anyway. But there's guys that make the artificial, there's something wrong with you if there's something missing. You know, if you don't have a uterus, you can't have a climax with me. I mean, there's a whole emotional part. Remember we talked about hysteria?
Yeah.
Well, it works both ways from the guy and the woman. And you have to understand this, that, yeah, it's better for Pam. It's better for her relationship is, you know, I got no scar in my belly, you know. And then there's other women on the other side who, you know, really need to have surgery. And there are those. I mean, I had, you know, two women this year we operated on for cancer. Well, you got to have it out for cancer. But there's other, there in between there, it might be a best approach. And in the old days, what I used to say is, well, you know, you can decide on this or not, but I can guarantee you that if we do your hysterectomy, you can have a tummy tuck at the same time. And I didn't have one woman ever complain.
Yeah, so, exactly.
So there's emotional, there's physical, there's psychological aspects. And the thing is, you can't do this in 3 minutes. You got to talk to the patient. You got to give them time to talk. You got to find where they're at. And that's how you establish a relationship to get the best results.
Thank you, Pam, for coming in and sharing your story with us today.
My pleasure. Hope it was helpful.
Oh, it was very helpful. I learned a lot about something I knew very little about. And that's what the Licton Lifestyle is all about. And new programs are available every single week on iTunes. You can download them to go on your iPod, or you can listen to them on your computer. You can even subscribe, and they'll automatically be loaded to your library. So listen to us on iTunes or on antiagingradio.com, a new show every week. Follow us on Twitter. The follow name is Anti-Aging Radio. And if you'd like to write a question to Dr. Licton, you can write him at usdrradio@gmail.com. You can visit his website at usdoctor.com. So tell your friends. We're available online or on iTunes. And if you'd like to contact Dr. Licton for a consultation, his phone number is 248-593-9999. One more time. It's 248-593-9999. It's another show, Doctor.
Hey, two albums down. We have to start a third one.
Yeah, we're into like episode number 32 now. So it's been fun every week. And as always, we appreciate your time. Everyone, we'll talk to you next time. Until then, I'm Steve Peck saying, stay healthy, everyone.